Loaded with flechette rounds, the weapon would blow a person or creature into shreds at 20 yards. Holding his huge Lama steady, Doc rotated the cylinder to visually inspect the loads. Long blaster in one hand, 9mm pistol in the other, Ryan headed across the chamber, JB and Christy flanking him. As the three entered the next room, the others waited from the doorway, ready to give cover in case of trouble. Both of his blasters sweeping for targets, Ryan stepped through the oval doorway and blinked at the harsh fumes tainting the murky atmosphere. Moving stealthily, he dimly saw a control console, some shelves to the left, and a hulking collection of machinery to the right. The room continued for another few yards, then ended in another steel door exactly like the first.
JB, Christy, behind the console.
As they took the position, Ryan listened at the door for a moment, then started to turn the wheel. He struggled against the rust, finally forcing the wheel to turn, the heavy levers withdrawing from the four sides of the frame and coming free with a rain of corrosion sprinkling to the floor. As the door disengaged, Ryan pulled it aside. Raw sunlight and fresh air poured into the room, carrying the smell of a jungle. As the fresh air blew into the gateway, it broke the cobwebs apart and stirred tiny dust devils to dance madly about the metal floor. Blinking at the harsh daylight, Ryan stepped onto a pre-dark concrete sidewalk, tall weeds growing in the cracks. Past the sidewalk was a large expanse of bare ground, the wrecks of wags and assorted debris dotting the black soil in an irregular pattern. A telephone pole rested almost sideways amid the broken things, the remains of insulated cables dangling impotently from the rotting crossbars. Seagulls called and circled in the sky against a dark expanse of storm clouds laced with orange and purple. Thunder rumbled softly as sheet lightning flashed in the heavens. Ryan sniffed carefully, but couldn't detect any trace of sulfur.
At least no acid rain.
A lush jungle rose all around the metal building, colorful flowers blooming everywhere. Somewhere in the far distance, a large cat roared a challenge to the world. Leaving the door open, Ryan turned. Soon, the rest of the companions entered the small room, efficiently spreading out. Less than a minute later, they converged across the room near Ryan. Gratefully, they gulped in the fresh air as the jungle breeze swirled the exhaust around and around the room, quickly dissipating the fumes.
Nobody here.
Christy eased down the hammer on her SW-38 revolver.
Not anymore.
Ryan glanced that way, then strode over. He'd missed this in the thick clouds, walking right by the poor bastard. It was a human skeleton lying face down on the floor, one hand extended towards the Mat-Trans unit. From under the tattered strips of dingy cloth, bare white bones gleamed in the reflected light from outside. There were no shoes or weapons. As there was nothing to salvage from the bones on the floor, Ryan checked the wall shelves. But they contained only sagging cardboard boxes that had once been filled with ammo and other assorted trash lying under a thin coating of dust.
Whoever jumped must have taken everything with them.
A white coat. Maybe the tech who built the gateway.
How did he die?
Not see lead or arrow. Head not bust. No club job.
He bled to death.
On a nearby wall, there were a couple of sharp steel spikes sticking out. Smeared patterns of brown went from the spikes to the floor, the trails going straight to the mutilated hands of the dead man.
Nailed him to the wall, where he could watch the others leave.
Taking a knife from her boot, Christy probed the brittle bones of the hands.
Crude job. Center bones are all shattered. That's how he was able to get loose. These folks obviously didn't do a lot of this.
So he was somebody special they hated. Probably wanted him to starve to death while choking in the exhaust fumes with escape only yards away.
Phew. Lot of hate.
Hate is often more powerful than love, Jack, my friend. This stalwart chap pulled himself off the wall to escape, and died of blood loss trying to follow them.
Mildred lifted the pelvic bone from the ancient skeleton.
Her?
Pardon me, Mildred?
This was a woman. Middle-aged, good health.
Recent?
Placing the pelvis aside, the physician lifted the skull and unhinged the jaw to glance at the teeth.
Pre-dark. This is ceramic dental work. Top of the line. Not old-fashioned silver inlays. From my time.
Hey, what's that?
Exposed on the floor was some sort of a symbol written in the dead woman's blood. Two lines of different lengths were bisected by another line at an angle.
Don't recognize that. Doc?
Not Latin. Nor is it from the Greek alphabet, Sanskrit, or hieroglyphics. Perhaps Hebrew, Ryan.
Hard to say.
Tech talk.
Mill code?
Could be anything, son. Or nothing. A person can get crazy when dying from blood loss. Sort of like being drunk while freezing to death.
Nasty.
Well, there's no good way to die, Dean.
Must have been mighty important for her to write in blood and then lay a hand over the symbol to protect it from being smudged.
Licking the point on a stubby pencil, Mildred carefully duplicated the symbol in her yellowed notepad and slid it back into her med kit.
Might be important.
Maybe to her, not us. Our concern is getting out of here.
Rising, Jack walked over to the open door and leaned against the jamb, his massive .357 Magnum Colt Python in hand. He offered the rest of the jerky to Dean, who accepted, and the two teens stood guard, chewing steadily. Edging the bare ground was a tattered wooden fence and some rusted coils of what might have been barbed wire. On the other side was the crushed wreckage of civilian cars and assorted junk.
Invasion force?
Hell of a fight.
Yep.
Smells good, though.
Like home?
Bayou swamp, not jungle. But close enough.
Crossing the room, Ryan went to the hodgepodge assortment of machinery. The collection reached from the front wall to the wall of the Matt Trans unit. At the front end was a pile of nuke batteries. At the other end was a coil of highly polished copper, apparently filled with lots of smaller coils inside and a single massive iron bar in the middle. What it could be, he had no idea. Dusting off his hands, J.B. rose from behind the console he'd been studying and started flipping switches on the control board.
Tell me, J.B.
Damned if I know. Everything here seems to be in working order, so that's not the problem.
Going to a large metal tank extending from the side of a motor, J.B. unscrewed the cap and looked inside. Then he stuck in a hand, his fingertips coming out barely moistened.
Nuke me. We're trapped.
Suddenly, the machinery struggled to life, spewing out black clouds of exhaust, but it stopped after only a few seconds.
Doesn't sound broken. Out of gas?
Yeah. Not a drop left in the fuel tank.
The Mattrans runs on gas?
How is that possible?
Ryan was right, Christy. These folks were desperate to leave. This is the most ramshackle piece of equipment I've ever seen. I'm astonished it ever worked. I mean, these nuke batteries start this big motor, which turns this modified car transmission to increase its RPM and turn this electric generator really fast so that it can feed high-voltage current into a step-up transformer, which boosts the voltage again and pours the electricity into this homemade Tesla coil until there's enough power to run the Mattrans.
What?
Brilliant. A homemade lightning bolt. Most impressive.
Doc moved eagerly to inspect the machine's copper coil.
Freeze! The Mattrans needs a bastard load of power to work, and while that coil doesn't have enough to send us anywhere, it's still got sufficient volts to kill you. Won't be anything left but ash and an echo.
Indeed. Thank you for the admonishment, John Barrymore.
Be more careful, you old coot.
I will, Madam Mildred. Next time, I shall have you touch it for me.
There it goes!
Damned homemade gateway, jerry-built power plant.
Ryan studied the control panel on the turbine and flipped a cutoff switch. Several weakly glowing indicators faded away into darkness.
Hell, we're lucky we ever made it here alive.
Only gas? Or shine okay?
Well, JB?
No, it doesn't have to be gas, I don't think. Shine should do the job, too. This isn't a car motor, but an emergency generator. Turbine, not pistons. Designed to run on just about anything fluid that burns.
We have this Molotov. Here, take it, Ryan.
Ryan took the cocktail and shook it gently. The brownish fluid inside the bottle frothed slightly, but didn't foam.
Good. No soap mixed in.
No, not enough, Ryan. I guess that we need a full gallon to recharge the system. This is less than a quart. Nowhere near what we need.
But a good start, J.B. We can make the rest. Eh, my dear Jack?
Sure. Shine, no pride. We need time. Wheat to turn mash. Need copper pipe for distill. Sugar, no prob. Jungle got lots of fruit for sweetening.
It does not have to taste good.
Sweetening makes the turn faster.
Ah. Anybody got a better plan? Okay, then. We build a still, make shine, and jump out of here in a week. Mildred, what's the food supply?
3 days. Maybe four.
Then we'll need to go hunting. Let's wreck the local area, and then make camp.
Everybody dropped their backpacks with sighs of relief, then started from the building. The last one to leave, Mildred took the chair from the console and tipped it over, sliding it underneath the oval door, jamming it open. Unlike a redoubt, the gateway didn't have a keypad lock, and she liked to make sure they always had a clear path of retreat. Uzi cradled in his grip, J.B. stayed by the gateway as the anchor man, while the rest circled the building. As the companions moved off on patrol, Christy went directly to the sagging fence and studied the junkyard. There was a hint of barbed wire on the posts, no more than rusted pieces of wire now. But there sure seemed to be a paved road under the piles of debris.
Damage from a nuke quake?
Starting along the perimeter in the opposite direction from the others, she could see the section of ground they were on was actually a small mesa. A column of ground thrust some 10 feet or so straight up from the rest of the jungle. More nuke landscaping, but that was good news. It would be an easy climb down, but that 10 feet would stop most nighttime predators. This was just about as fine a base camp as she had ever encountered. Even from this height, she could see a dozen different types of fruit hanging from the branches of the nearby trees, and the lush growth reached to the distant horizon. Very faintly, Christy caught the sounds of waves on a beach somewhere. Worst case, they could live for quite a while, as long as they found clean water. Leading the others, Ryan strode into view from around the corner of the building and stopped upon seeing the redhead. They exchanged nods, announcing everything was fine. Not for the first time, Ryan realized how amazingly beautiful Christy was. Once he'd found a stash of old porno mags from pre-dark days, and none of those ancient beauties could hold a candle to the fiery redhead. Then he pushed that thought from his mind. They had work to do right now.
See anything, Christy?
He gave her shoulder a gentle squeeze. Christy placed her own hand on top of his and squeezed back.
Not a thing, lover. No vills in sight where we could buy juice.
No ruins either. We're all alone for once.
Oh, sounds great. We've been in a lot of tough scrapes lately. Be nice just to sit and rest for a while.
Amen to that, dear lady. Ere the heart of a warrior break and die, he needs to sit some time and dream of nigh.
Longfellow?
No, Catullus, Mildred.
Ah.
Damn strange about all these traps.
Traps? Looks like junk.
Most things look that way after getting blown apart. There's a minefield out there.
We're going to have a bitch of a job carving a path through this. 100-year-old landmines tend to detonate whenever they feel like it.
Christy suddenly jerked her weapon free and glanced upward.
Something?
Jack raised his hand cannon and followed her gaze. The sky was clear. Just the usual stormy clouds full of acid, sheet lightning, and fiery rads.
A shadow. Maybe just a cloud.
Maybe not.
Hot pipe!
Dean drew his blaster, pointed it at his father's head, and... Falling from the sky was a huge bird, its chest pumping blood from the bullet wound. The creature hit the ground with a feathery thump and died. J.B. gently prodded the corpse with the barrel of his Uzi.
What is it?
Condor. Biggest bird in the world.
Beauty.
No, indeed. It is a pure-blooded creature of nature, same as you and I. 3 feet tall, 8 foot wingspan. It's the killer of the sky. In a fight with a stingwing or a screamer, I would put my money on this winged emperor.
Turning, Ryan studied the sky. Tiny dots were circling high above them.
Looks like they travel in flocks. Everybody move slow and walk casual to the door. Don't want to get caught in the open by these things.
Big bastards.
Oh, Jack, it is highly unlikely that they will attack with one of their own dead on the ground. Besides, birds fly in flocks, but attack alone.
Usually. You an expert on condors?
No, madam, I am not.
Then shut up.
An odd motion in the treetops caught Christie's attention, and she started firing even before the condors hidden in the greenery launched themselves at the human prey. Even as the companions turned to this new threat, the birds in the sky folded their wings and dropped straight down, their huge bodies brownish-gold blurs.
Dive bombers!
Mildred lifted her ZKR blaster in both hands and tracked the huge killers. 200 yards away, she had their speed and squeezed off a shot. A condor flipped sideways, colliding with others and breaking the mass charge. The rest of the companions opened fire in every direction.
Can't hit them! They're too fast!
Don't aim at the body, boy. Shoot at the beak. Use their speed against them.
Dean did as ordered. The condor died, then another and a third. But six more took their place from the jungle trees. The supply of the winged giants seemed endless, and his ammo was dwindling rapidly. He glanced at the doorway. More was in his backpack, but that was 50 feet away. Might as well be on the moon. Looping into their midst, a screaming condor flew between the companions, needle-sharp talons grabbing for human flesh. Jack gestured, and the bird hit the ground rolling, its neck stump pumping out blood by the pint.
Ha!
Flicking the bird's head off his blade, the teenager fired his magnum at another target, but kept the gore-soaked knife ready in his grip.
Keep shifting position, people. Don't give them a stable target.
In ragged formation, the companions rotated in a circle. Disoriented by the tactic, several of the birds banked away from the group to try from a different direction. But that exposed their vulnerable underbellies for a critical instant, and a dozen more died in the sky. But then the first of the mutilated bodies arrived. The booming Lama was violently knocked from Doc's grip by a thrashing corpse, and Ryan staggered under the impact of another. As they scrambled to recover their weapons, there was a breach in the circle, and the condors rushed the weak spot in the human's defense. Chattering Uzi spraying a wreath of hot lead, JB shrugged a shoulder and managed to slide the SNW shotgun off his back.
Millie!
He tossed the blaster her way.
Thanks, JB!
Bolstering her ZKR, Mildred made the catch, turned and fired as fast as she could pump the action. The barrage of flechettes tore the incoming flock apart into an explosion of feathers and blood. Emptying half a clip, Ryan aced two more birds on the wing. One plummeted out of sight beyond the edge of the mesa, while the other hit amid the wreckage of the pre-dark wags.